United States against Bonner is the next case. Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Organ and I represent Vernon Bonner, the defendant appellant in this matter. The jury's verdict of guilty in this case of mail fraud and theft clearly signified that they believed the testimony of Angelita Kettles, the complainant in this case, and did not believe the testimony of Vernon Bonner, the defendant. And it is because the government unfairly bolstered the testimony of Angelita Kettles and unfairly attacked credibility of Vernon Bonner that this verdict denied, or that Vernon Bonner was denied a fair trial. The errors complained of by Mr. Bonner in this case are both fundamental and significant. In the government's case in chief, they called a witness who, Farrell Tate, who happened to be a lawyer for the National Labor Relations Board. He was asked, now keep in mind this is the government's case in chief, he was asked if he was aware of the defendant's reputation for truthfulness and honesty. He indicated at that point that he, while having known the defendant since 1984, was not aware of the defendant's reputation for truthfulness and honesty. The follow-up question was, do you know him to be a generous person? And the answer was no. I would submit that at that moment in the trial, in the government's case in chief, the defendant certainly could not have raised his character for truth and honesty as an issue in this cause. He had not testified on his own behalf, obviously, and he hadn't brought it up in any other way.
Well, isn't that part of the question, though? The government argues that he indeed had brought it up through his lawyer in the opening statement, that the implication, if not the specific words of the opening statement, were that he had been such a generous man that he'd loaned tens of thousands of dollars to Mrs. Kettles and that he was, you know, an honorable person. And so the government believed that that was going to be an issue. Now, you may wish to contest that, but that certainly is the government's justification, as I understand it, for this line of questioning.
I understand that justification, but the jury was advised, and everybody is well aware, that opening statements made by counsel are not evidence, not to be considered as evidence.
They're not evidence, but they signal, I suppose, what are the issues going to be in the trial. So you think nothing said in opening statements allows exploration of issues?
Well, certainly you can explore issues, but you can't explore an issue that is strictly the right of the defendant if he chooses to raise the issue of his own character. And he can only do that in certain ways. He can't do that by parading witnesses before the court to say he's a nice guy, he helps out in the Little League, he does...
His lawyer is allowed to say in opening statement, this is the most honorable man ever born, and then just sort of never say anything about it in his case, and the government has to sit there and allow that to remain unanswered?
Until such time as evidence is presented to the jury, that's exactly my position.
Okay.
I would indicate further that this attack on the credibility of the defendant at that stage in the trial, with the particular witness involved, Mr. Tate, It takes on an additional significance because Mr. Tate is an attorney for the government. As soon as a jury hears or a witness is sworn in as a lawyer for the government, I submit it is perceived that he has a higher status than the typical civilian witness would have. And the fact that the government in this case chose early in the trial to give him that status and have him attack the credibility of his alleged friend was certainly fundamentally unfair. It's also important.
There was evidence, was there not, that Mr. Bonner put his name, the witness's name, on a document as if that person were Mrs. Kettle's lawyer when that wasn't the case and he had not authorized that?
Yes, that is the case, certainly. But in terms of Mr. Tate, it's also interesting to note that when the government asked him, do you have an opinion as to the reputation of Mr. Bonner for honesty and truthfulness, he answered no. He answered that he did not really know what his reputation was. Now, given that, what was the question asked for? What was the point of asking the question? Certainly the government talked to Mr. Tate before they put him on the witness stand. Then what's the point of asking him the question, do you know his reputation for truthfulness and honesty, if in fact he doesn't know? That's like asking a person, putting a witness on the stand when you know he's going to assert his Fifth Amendment privilege not to testify. That's clearly improper. And I would submit the same is true here. When Mr. Tate answered the question that since he's a government's witness, they must have known what the answer was going to be. And when he said no, it was particularly detrimental since he's been his friend since 1984.
With regard to Blake and Graham, there was no objection to those questions being asked.
That's correct, and obviously they're going to have to be reviewed under a plain error standard. But in this case, I'm submitting that the entire case is, do you believe Angelita Kettles or do you believe Vernon Bonner? And when we ask, for example, on Mr. Blake or Mrs. Graham, certain questions dealing with the reputation of Angelita Kettles for truthfulness and honesty, no foundation was laid in terms of reputation evidence. How is it that they don't simply get to ask what's her reputation? There must be some foundation in terms of how long have you known this person, under what circumstances have you heard of the reputation, particularly with Mrs. Graham.
I know, but that would be very good if you made the objection at the time.
I understand, and it didn't, but I must stress the significance of the bolstering of both Mrs. Graham and Mr. Blake.
But the government had other circumstantial evidence that Mr. Bonner's story, to put it charitably, had holes in it, namely that he claimed he was advancing all this money to her when, in fact, he had no discernible source of income during that period of time. It was before he started reimbursing himself with the VA payments. It's not as though there was nothing else. I agree with you that there's a lot of credibility in this case, but the government had supporting evidence.
There was some other additional evidence, but even the government, in the transcript of the trial that I submitted and in the brief, the government's attorney suggested to Judge Lozano during the course of a sidebar that this case hinges strictly on credibility. You either believe Mr. Bonner or you believe Ms. Kettles, and I would submit that is the case. I would further indicate in terms of my bolstering argument that they tried to bolster the testimony of Angelita Kettles unfairly through the testimony of Agent Penton, who was asked on direct examination and indicated that the jury should believe Angelita because he conducted an investigation into her conduct in this case and she was cleared of any wrongdoing. Clearly an improper question in an attempt to bolster her credibility. And he went on to say, Agent Penton went on to further testify regarding the lack of credibility of Vernon Bonner, that at all times during the course of his investigation, Vernon Bonner refused to cooperate with the government, as if he had some duty to cooperate with the government. He also testified that Mr. Bonner refused to answer any of his questions. And clearly, in my brief, and I submit to you today, that Mr. Bonner had no duty to answer any of the questions put to him by Agent Penton. He certainly had a Fifth Amendment right not to answer any of his questions, and he chose to exercise it, and he should not be penalized for exercising the constitutional right. I would, at this time, ask to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mrs. Berglund.
May it please the Court, Diane Berkowitz of the United States. I'd like to address counsel's last few statements regarding the testimony provided by the case agent on Mr. Bonner's behavior during the handwriting exemplars and the questions that he asked him prior to that about whether or not he wished to speak to the investigator about the checks that had been siphoned off from Ms. Angelita Kettles. The defendant's initial response was he did not wish to talk, and had it been left at that, it would be unassailable. But what the defendant goes on to do is, prior to his providing the handwriting exemplars, he ships off to the investigating agent exculpatory material. When he arrives at the handwriting exemplars, the agent has the exculpatory material and asks the defendant if he'd like to talk about it. The response is no. The defendant certainly does have a right not to speak, but he does not have a right to pervert the process, the criminal justice process. He does not have the right to use the shield of self-incrimination when he is going to go down the road of exculpatory information.
Would you be making this argument if he had produced those materials in the envelope in response to a subpoena? Suppose the grand jury subpoenaed him, and that's what they got. And then the agent says, would you like to talk about the materials produced?
I think it would be a more difficult argument, Your Honor. But here, they are not required of him. They are not even requested of him. And he voluntarily produces them. Further, this defendant takes the stand at his trial. And not only does he acknowledge doing that, but he goes on to say that in addition to those documents provided prior to the handwriting exemplars, at the time he produces the exemplars, at the end of the process, he seeks to give the investigating agent additional documents. He is clearly exploiting the shield of self-incrimination. And as I point out to the Court, I believe Davenport is a very applicable case to this situation. Also, counsel has discussed the bolstering issue. I would note in all the instances that counsel has reviewed with this Court, the testimony of Angelia Kettles, the testimony of Farrell Tate, those are instances where there was no objection by the defense counsel. With respect to Angelita Kettles, her, as the Court has noted, her credibility was attacked very early on in the case, in opening statement, and again during her cross-examination, where it was made very clear that the position taken by the defendant was that she was testifying for the government in exchange for getting her benefits back. The testimony of Farrell Tate was the concentration of that examination had to do with the money that Mr. Tate was being paid, ostensibly to represent Angelita Kettles, or at least that was what was represented in some filings with the Social Security Administration. When he was asked about the character of the defendant, there was no objection by counsel. He was asked about the amount of whether the defendant was a generous person, there was no objection by counsel. Even if this Court is to assume that was error to ask the questions, it does not rise to the level of plain error. As for the agent's comments that the defendant acted deceptively in providing the handwriting exemplars, that was addressed by the trial court when it gave an admonition to the jury to disregard it. It sustained the objection and it admonished the jury to disregard the statement. If the Court has no further questions, the government would rely
counsel,
on
counsel, let me ask you, has this case been up before in any manner before our court?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Has it been before the court on any basis before this case?
Before the appellate court?
Right.
No, it has not, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Morgan?
The government attacks suggest that it's proper to bolster the testimony of Angelita Kettles because her credibility was attacked early and often. I would submit the record shows that the statement that was allegedly made in opening statement by the defense counsel consisted of one sentence reading, "Now I don't expect Mrs. Kettles to agree to that because now she is receiving government benefits again and she has been cut off in the past." The second instance is two questions that were asked during her direct, and only two questions that were asked. Question, did the Veterans Administration give you a check for $48,000 in September 99? Answer, yes. And the last question, did they tell you you would have to testify against the defendant at that time? Answer, yes. Those are the only two instances that could possibly be construed as attacking the credibility of Angelita Kettle sufficient to allow the bolstering that was done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Organ. And Mr. Organ, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement.